This episode of the Profit Express is brought to you by Corbett Public Relations, promoting and protecting businesses and brands for over 30 years. So please visit my good friends at CorbettPR.com. That's CorbettPR.com. Well, hello and welcome to the Profit Express. I am Tim Healy, and I'm inviting you to join me each and every week so together we can win the battle for business. And as always, listen, thanks for sharing your time. Thanks for being on board. You can follow me and the show on Instagram at The Profit Express, also on Twitter at Profit_Express, the Facebook page, The Profit Express. And each and every Wednesday, we are dropping new episodes, so make sure you stay tuned, also on YouTube as well. So follow us, subscribe to the channel, and love to have you on board the journey. Now, we had just celebrated Black History Month, and it got me thinking of some iconic African-American entrepreneurs. And some of the ones that first came to mind, Barry Gordy, Motown record fame, who actually ran one of the most successful African-American businesses for decades. Then, of course, the queen of all media, Oprah Winfrey, came to mind, who is one of the first female multi-billionaires in North America. Now, Jay-Z also, hugely successful. And as a matter of fact, he just had, according to Forbes, he sold, I believe, it was a 50% stake in his Ace of Spades champagne brand. And the sale was over worth over $600 million. Some absolutely iconic Black entrepreneurs here in America today. But one of my favorites that I love to share and to talk about, and if you don't know, it's Madam C.J. Walker. If you haven't heard of her, please find out her story. Research her story. What makes, to me, in my opinion, her story so amazing is when she did what she did. She was alive from 1867 to 1919. And as we all know, that's a very different time in American history. And the story goes as this. She actually had lost a good amount of her hair, and it kind of forced her to create and develop her own hair care products for the African-American community. And so she did it. The products were fantastic. They were a big hit. And she was a master self-promoter. So she went out selling grassroots door-to-door in the African-American community. And she became so successful, she ended up recruiting her own army of salespeople as well. And she was the first, get this, the first self-made millionaire, African-American millionaire in America. In, again, she was born 1867, died in 1919. That's Madam C.J. Walker. Definitely a story worth researching, finding more about her details. So these are, in my opinion, some absolutely iconic Black entrepreneurs here in America. Barry Gordy, Oprah, Jay-Z, and I'm just scratching the surface of the big names that we all know. Now, what I'd love to do today is introduce somebody who is beginning to blaze trails. Now, I've just shared some great people who have and are still continuing to blaze trails. But today's guest is somebody who's beginning to blaze trails, and they've chosen the world of finance. Now, why is that interesting? The world of finance in the African-American community is an interesting one. The African-American population in America is 13.4%. Yet, financial advisors, only 5% are African-American. So it's clearly underrepresented. And today's guest is making his career, his life's passion, one to serve the world of finance, in particular for the African-American community. And like I said, he's just beginning his trailblazing. He is Jordan Owuye. He is he's the founder and managing partner of Owuye Capital. So it is a pleasure to have on the show. Jordan, how are you today?
I'm doing well. I'm doing well, Tim. Thank you for asking, buddy.
Well, you know what? Not only are you beginning to blaze your trails, you've also been featured on Forbes. Yahoo Finance. You're a contributor to CNBC. So you're making and shaking right out of the gate. You got a lot of very interesting things going on. Congratulations.
I appreciate it. Trying to. Like they say, marketing is everything, right? Being omnipresence.
That's absolutely right. Absolutely right. Well, listen, you're in some good company today. You know, I kind of started off the show by sharing some iconic black entrepreneurs. And I am particularly drawn to your story because of what you're choosing to get into. And that's the world of finance. And I just shared some interesting statistics as the African or how the African American community is represented. So let's just start off with that. Why did you choose the path you've chosen to immerse yourself in finance?
Well, that's a great question. I mean, like you said, the story is in the numbers. And ironically enough, I do finance, so we do numbers. But those numbers are very, very powerful. They speak volumes in regards to there is no representation in the financial field. And that's a direct correlation to the financial success of the African-American community, because you'll notice the dinnertime conversations are a lot different pending demographics. And in the African-American communities, there's no African-Americans that are in finance to bring this normalized financial literacy within the household. So why? I just realized it was a tremendous gap. Ironically enough, if you ask my mother, she always used to call me a money pinching, you know, pinching little kid. That was my name, because I was always counting my pennies and hoarding. But it was just natural. It made sense to me. And when I finished playing basketball, I was lucky enough to get a full scholarship. I went to school for medicine. I do everything for the love, and I lost the love for basketball and medicine. And finance, it just sat right with my soul. I realized it could be bigger than just the dollars and cents. It could be actually leaving an impact. And I just wanted to actually do something that I could leave a mark, like you said, trailblaze, and try to create more financial advisors that look like me for the future.
So you were able to play. It was a scholarship for basketball. Mm-hmm. You had originally started in medicine. Mm-hmm. And you lost the love for it. And for you, it's about pursuing it based on the passion and based on the love. And you said something very interesting. I guess it's in the community, in the African American community, there aren't those conversations, if I heard you right, around the dinner tables with finance. Is that right?
Absolutely. I think it's profound, because again, as an African American, it's not like I gravitate to any particular race or demographic, right? In America, it's lucky everything's a melting pot. So I'm lucky where I have a lot of close, you know, Caucasian friends, Spanish, mm-hmm. any demographic, Asian, and the conversations are different, right? Now, if in the financial industry, 85%+ is white, mm-hmm. that means that just as a byproduct of what you do, right? But as a byproduct of what you do and the demographics within the field, you either have an uncle, a father, an aunt, a mother, a cousin, a niece, a nephew that is in finance in some way, shape, or form. And it's only natural for those conversations to come up in everyday life for your kids. And then you talk to your children differently. You give them different tips and tricks. Just as a byproduct of what you know, actually, you know, knowledge is power.
Sure.
You're going to teach your kids differently. You're going to interact with them differently. You're going to give them different incentives in life to create who they are as people. So one of the things that especially once I started in finance, I started to notice the difference was that, again, when we go out to the Hamptons or do whatever, the conversations are different in particular demographics. Hence the reason why particular demographics treat money and have different relationships with money. And it's so much of a psychological thing. It's so much of a how you were raised type of deal that the only way it could be changed is from the grassroots. And that's dinner time conversations, making it fun and normalizing it. And the only way to do that is have proper representation, because a lot of times the first leaders in a child's life is the mother or father. The first person you trust or you love is the mother and father. So it's always going to have a level of trust where they believe they're getting the right guidance, as opposed to looking outside and always have a level of skepticism when it comes to money. And all too often, the African-American community has to look outside. Hence the reason why it's always a level of skepticism with that relationship with money.
Well, listen, I love the way you put that, because you're like, with financial advisors, if the number is roughly 85% who are white, and it would be more likely, just the numbers, that, you know, you will have somebody, a parent, an uncle, a relative who's in that industry, who again has those conversations. And people might underestimate the importance of the conversation, but like you said, it's at the dinner table. And that's such a powerful time for a family when you talk about so many different things. And it's when we have our beliefs about, and one of them being money. And, you know, are you talking about a scarcity mentality when you're being brought up, or a mentality of abundance? And listen, I've had the good fortune of knowing you for about a year. And I love your passion, by the way. And that's, you know, not just what you're doing, but just your passion and your smile. I wanted to have you on, which is contagious. I love it. But to have that conversation, to talk about just financial literacy, which I don't think, not just in the African-American community, but I think in America, I wish that was talked about, you know, at a very early age in the schools, you know, for everybody, because I know I didn't get it as a kid. But it's really empowering them to understand and embrace a mentality of abundance.
Absolutely.
And to me, that's absolutely, absolutely critical. Some interesting stats I came across, I'm sure you're aware, Investopedia. So this was 2020. So these are really recent. The median retirement savings for a white household is $79,500. For a black household, it's $29,200. So the difference is staggering. Yeah. Absolutely staggering.
Over double, triple.
Yeah. So let's talk about Jordan for a second. I mentioned a number of iconic black entrepreneurs at the start of the show. Who would be one that, whether it's in the industry or not, that you have looked up to, maybe one that you've looked to model yourself after?
So I'll give you the truth. You gave me the prep for that question. I've heard it before and I've thought about it very much, right? I've thought about it very much. And I'll be frank, it's I don't have any black entrepreneurial role models, right?
Okay.
Have people that I greatly respect, but the reality is in my field, a direct represents like reflection of my field, to where it's like, I could be like that guy. It's not a lot of black powerful representation. Now, right. I will preface that statement by saying Robert F. Smith, he's in finance, but he's on a different side of finance, but I greatly respect him, look up to him, you know, put it in the atmosphere that I'll meet him one day and we could collaborate on something. Damon John, again, just love what he's doing for our people, the representation, great respect for him. But it's, like you said, a different model. And I was lucky to just learn. Right. Learn within the organization I was with, pick up as much as possible. And to be honest, replicate my mother. She is not an entrepreneur, but she is, because, you know, 9 to 5, she's building a portfolio. She's raising kids. Like, the time management skills, the work ethic, the attention to detail, the never complain attitude is the foundation of how I run my practice today. So I can't. I'll stick to mom. I really try to replicate it off of mother, and what I've learned in my days as an athlete, the good habits I was lucky to pick up.
Well, I mean, listen. Let's face it. You know, athletics, and if you're in scholarship in college, you are competing at a high level, obviously. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of great lessons in athletics and coaches and all that. But then mom, I mean. It sounds, I just, the way you're talking about your mom, I can see your face light up. So it looks like and sounds like she's had a tremendous impact on you.
Oh, tremendous. That's my best friend. It's not a problem I go through today where I won't run it by her, just for even if I have the answer, because she's so organically happy for you as like a parent, but like a fan. You know how fans from afar are like tremendously happy for somebody? She watches what I do with a level of just happiness, like pure happiness, that
right.
I just feed off that, and she's never at one point in my life led me to where I didn't believe she had my back 120%. So yeah, I couldn't have nothing but pure love for my mother.
So that's great to hear. So she's your great friend, and that's interesting because you don't always hear that with a mom. I mean, because it's a different role, that a friend and she's a fan. It's funny, as you say that, I got an interesting visual in my head about your mom just literally on the sidelines cheering for you.
And our irony is, you'll never see her do that. That's the crazy part. She'll just be in the back, just like this.
So
Yeah,
she's understated. Yes, okay.
you never see it. But when we get a chance to speak to her, come see her, whatever the case is, and
Right.
just, you can see the level of excitement she'll take, and how hard she'll go with the little things. Like, again, my mother was always up at 5 a.m., and I always had to do things on my own. But
Right.
if it was something as simple as, for a single parent that has her kids, hey, I need to, and I'll spring this on her last minute. Again, I'm playing basketball. I'm taking it seriously. I got a chance to go to Vegas. This is a 15-year-old kid, all expenses paid to go to Vegas. You never met the guy. You never heard it before. And she's just like, again, something as a parent, I'm sure as a grown
Sure.
now, it's a level of, again, skepticism, but just that looking at your child's eye and seeing how serious I am, she couldn't say no. She never said no, and that was always it. If it was something that made me happy or allowed me to get closer to my goals, there's no way in hell she wasn't doing something to
Right.
allow me to get close, or just falling back, which was also sometimes what you need as a child, especially for me, my personality, very self-starter, very much want to do it my own way. And a lot of times she realized she just needed to let me do it, whether it was burn or succeed. She was really good at knowing when to help and when to just let me be me.
Wow. Maybe she got your mom on the show too.
Well, maybe
She
she might be a close pocket. Maybe, man. She might have a lot more guns for the people than myself. She created me, so she did something
Absolutely.
right.
Absolutely. So let's get back into finance now for a moment. So just speaking of finance in general, what is it that you see about the typical American that whether it's a lack of understanding? Because listen, finances, as you know, is a very it's an emotional topic for people. You know, it's retirement, it's about security, sending kids to college. There's a lot of elements in a person's life where finances are absolutely critical to either succeeding or not succeeding, or having comfort and security or not. So from your perspective as a professional, what do you see as some of the keys that the mistakes that people make, or maybe misunderstandings, if that makes sense, as far as the world of finance?
Great question. First thing is the level of complication it takes to be quote unquote financially literally and financially sound. Oftentimes, again, as somebody who's in finance and somebody who would love to think that I'm the best thing since sliced bread, I'm not. Finance is not that hard. You know what I mean? It just takes a level of focus and a level
Right.
of care, but anybody could do it. Anybody could do it. I don't care level of education or if you care to learn. And nowadays, you could find out any question from this little device right here.
Right.
You have what it takes to put yourself in a good financial position. So one of the first and greatest misconceptions is the level of complexity that it takes to complexity and effort that it takes to get yourself to where you want to be financially. Second is how much money you need to get started, which is a
Yeah.
question that I hear all too often, where it's like, I don't have enough money yet. Well, when will you ever? Because you're consistently perpetuating a cycle that's going to keep you at the level you're at. The
Right.
definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, hoping for different results. So
Yep.
you never had money to invest. When will you get money to invest if you're not changing the pattern to get money? You see what I'm getting at? So
Right. It's a vicious cycle. Yeah.
exactly, a self-fulfilling prophecy. So those two misconceptions on the most basic level are something that we see way too often. And I would say right now, and I'm super happy to I feel like the notion is changing a little bit, especially within the millennial generation, where you're seeing the normalization of the Robinhood, the E-Trade platforms, the things that are, very user-friendly, so to speak, and targeted and marketed to a particular demographic and community, which is a younger demographic. But those are the two things that I see, and those would be probably the two things I would start off with, just the level of complication and effort that it takes and the amount of money that's really needed to get started. You can open an investment platform with Robinhood for a dollar, get started trading for a dollar. Now, what you could buy might be very limited.
Right.
But at the end of the day, it's better than you did the day before. You're a step closer. And as an advisor, especially in my practice, we like to focus on the mindset, the mental, the relationship, right? The emotional. What's your why? The numbers are always going to remain the same. The numbers are steadfast as numbers. But if we can't get to your why and what's this block, and even to a certain degree, I find myself being like a therapist, what relationship you had with your parents, right? What happened to you as a child? Because people are creatures of habit. One of the hardest things I have to do with people to get them out of this financial funk is to break them out of their own habits and hold them accountable. A lot of times that's a mental barrier.
Yeah, I mean, you've mentioned a lot of really powerful things right there. Because if people don't understand finance, they're crippled mentally or emotionally about, you know, the complexity of it. So then that keeps them on the sidelines, number one. And that's why there's professionals like you who can take them through explaining it. And then also, you know, I don't have enough. Well, I'll wait till I have $10,000 to invest. You know, and like you said, especially with the online platforms, you can get in for a dollar. Yes. So listen, most, I don't want to make too much of a general assumption, but it's not that hard for people to be able to get, you know, a couple of $100 to get something going, you know. But, you know, I think such, I can imagine so many people just sitting on the sidelines and how money can work for you over time, which, listen, I don't have to tell you. But so you mentioned that. So you mentioned the complexity. You mentioned just, you know, it doesn't take much, you know, dollar-wise to get in. And then you mentioned something, and this is why, I mean, I was excited to have you on. Now I'm more excited now that we're getting into this conversation and we're digging deep into it. People's mindset. Okay, that is what is super critical. Their mindset and why they're doing it. Because of that financial picture with somebody, it's, you know, it's the retirement, it's the security, it's the income, the college for the children. So do you run into that a lot where people's mindsets are, you know, again, I like to think of scarcity versus abundance. They don't believe that they can retire, you know, financially stable?
Ironically enough, I see a lot of the opposite. When it, like in my personal experience, you see a level of dramaticism, I guess, so to speak, of what can be. And what I mean by that is, and you know what, you'll like this point, it's usually around the age of the people I deal with, right? So clientele, I have a wide ranging age of clientele. I have clients in the 20s, and I have my oldest client is 94.
Okay.
And everything in between.
Sure.
With that 50, 60 years older, it's a little bit more realistic. It's a little bit more of a old-fashioned thinking of the retire at 65. And if, like you said, just that little bit of a scarcity, I don't know if I'll be able to. We have to work a little bit longer.
Right.
A level of, you know, quote-unquote discipline, because there's a fear factor there. And it's again, usually tied to the age, because they grew up, they saw different things. They were spoken differently to from their parents, which were a lot older, probably experienced the Great Depression and certain financial events that created their thought process. So that scarcity, you see a little bit more of it in the older age group, which allows them to financially plan, or at least take it a little bit more seriously. With the 40, 45 and under, you see more of this abundance. You see more of this, I want to retire at the age of 45. I want to, you know, be financially free. We're hearing those terms. So you're not seeing as much scarcity anymore. You're seeing abundance, but even a false level of abundance, to where now you feel a little too comfortable. You're setting goals that are a little bit too ambitious. Too ambitious. Is it realistic? Because we even had this conversation off camera. Having goals that are not attainable could have a negative effect. It could actually have a counter effect, because,
right, right,
you know, having that failure. So that's a long way of answering your question. I see it on both sides of the spectrum. And now that I think about it, it's usually tied to their age. So based off of their age group, you'll see leaning more to abundance, a level of I could do anything. We could make a million in 3 months. I just have to learn this with it and learn this and whatever the case is. And then more of, I am worried. I don't know if Social Security and my pension are enough. I might have to downsize my home and move to a place with a lower cost of living. And then we're able to you know, of course, work the numbers and do what we do. Mm-hmm. Mindset, it's interesting that you say. It's usually tied to the age group, I've noticed.
Well, it's interesting because you said, you know, you have clients who are as young as their 20s to your oldest client is 94. So that's obviously a 70-year gap. Mm-hmm. And it goes back to what are their life experiences. You know, if you live through the Depression or, you know, World War II, there's definitely going to be some life experiences that are etched into your brain that are definitely going to affect how you think about and embrace money and your own finances. So this is an interesting question. I'd be curious to get your take as a professional in the industry. obviously, there's lots of online platforms which make investing a lot easier than ever before. Mm-hmm. Is it a good thing or a bad thing? What do you think in general? Because then they're doing it by themselves. Mm-hmm. They might not in you know look to get the assistance of somebody like yourself, like an advisor. Right. Good thing or bad thing? What do you think?
I think that question has two answers, ironically enough. It's a double-edged sword. So it's a great thing. Personally, again, right off the bat, it's a great thing because just those like we started off, those first two misconceptions, it's too complex, I need a lot of money, it takes down that barrier. It makes it easier. It makes it more friendly. It makes it something that's attainable by the masses in this
right.
form. It's at your fingertips. It's no real excuse.
Yeah, like an Acorn, for example.
Exactly. Right. Acorn, Stash, Robinhood. These things are, and it's, again, marketed to where it takes down that level of billionaires only club.
Right.
So I think it's great because as soon as people believe that they can, what do? They start putting some action behind it. And then they start learning. They start buying. And even if they lose money, they gained experience. Right. And I love the online platforms because it allows people to get into finance, to learn. And if I'm a big believer that once you do it, you'll love it. Because, again, I can't tell anybody that, especially where I came from in Brooklyn, like just making money off my phone, doing a little homework. So it's amazing. But in the same breath, it can lead people to a lot of failure, a lot of money loss because.
How so?
All right. So. One, something that we call fool's gold. They make a couple lucky trades. They do this. They watch a TV show. All of a sudden, they don't need me. All of a sudden, my years of experience, my years of schooling, my years of academic achievements
right.
are relevant, and I could just do this in a flash in the pan. So then after they start to invest a little bit sloppy, they start to ignore signals. They start to ignore advice, and ultimately that comes back to bite them in the butt because – you can't win every trade. I don't care who you ask. Even the greatest out there, the Warren Buffetts, the Ray Dalios of the world, they're not 100% in right. terms of getting every trade right. So now if you don't understand how to properly diversify your money, create different buckets of money, understand the goals, the tax relationship with buying and selling stocks, all these things that come with a financial plan, then you could lose a significant amount of money, if not all your money, by not doing it the proper way, which is going the extra mile, getting a financial professional. Whether you use them or not, if it's that serious to you, you should get to that level of knowledge or outsource it to somebody that
right.
has a level of knowledge. So it's great because it opens it up. It's great because it makes it very easily accessible, but it also could give people fool's gold in regards to they start to believe they don't need any help. Right. They start to gamble a little bit more. They start to become a little big headed or just start to perpetuate the same cycle of bad financial literacy, because being a financial advisor is not only about investing in the market and making you money. It's so much more. Like we talked about, the psychological relationship, managing your cash flow, understanding how to mitigate and minimize risk, understanding how to transition, minimize your tax liability. Mm-hmm. Things are tied into your money management. So now, because you're making $2 in the stock market, you forget about budgeting. You forget about that. You see what I'm getting at?
Yeah.
So that's why it becomes a tough deal. But it has its goods and its bads.
Well, I think, yeah, it's good because it can get you interested and involved. You jump into the game, right? You get off the sidelines, which I think is very important. But another thing, as you're talking, yeah, if you get some quick hits and some early success, you know, then you think, oh, I don't need professional help. I'm Warren Buffett, right? Yeah. But then what I hate to see that, then if you then make some bad decisions on your own and you lose most or all of your investments, then you get out of it because you think, oh, this doesn't work. This is blah. And then again, mind trash about finances. And then you retreat from it, which would be long term horrible.
Yeah, and then you're scared for life. Like, all too often, you have people who lost money in 08 that still aren't investing, that still have that PTSD, so to speak, right?
Right.
You know, I heard a story about the Bernie Madoffs, right? The bad apple in the bunch, right?
And yep.
Why is that an issue? Because this one experience now makes your whole life 10 times harder. Don't care how you frame it, not investing, not taking a serious level of financial literacy, financial planning, an investment portfolio strategy to any degree is going to make your financial life harder, whether it's working more, your money not working hard, losing purchasing value just from inflation alone. People think that if I have $100 and I bury it, I put it under my pillow, that I'm good. That's no risk at all. That is very risky too, because every day you're losing money and your purchase power is going
low.
So subtleties like that, if you compound the interest, purchasing power drop, inflation, your life's going, you might not be able to retire when you think so. You might not be able to provide for your kids. You might not be able to afford that extra level of life insurance that left you exposed, which if you pre-deceased or, you know, the disability insurance, you know what comes with that. And then you get hurt, God forbid. So many things that people set them up because they had one bad experience. They had one bad trade, lost a couple $1,000 at Robinhood or Stash or whatever the case is. And that's not for me.
Right.
Right. And then we don't plan for retirement. We don't invest in a 401k. We don't have a pension plan. And we all know what could happen with that. You'll probably be working for the rest of your life, unfortunately, if you don't properly do it. So that's why I love it, but that's why I'm also a little hesitant, because you can see stories like that. Hence the reason why, like, the GameStop mania that's occurring right now is so relevant, because it's a big deal. It's a big deal. You have a lot of people going into the market, newbies, right, that are getting stimulus checks or whatever it is, and that's amazing. Make money. But what happens when they bet at all? What happens when they reverse? Do they have, you know, puts in place, you know, these measures to protect their cash? And when they lose, then what? How much people are resilient enough to analyze why they lost, take out the emotional factor from it, look at it from a logical, pragmatic standpoint, and get better from it?
Right.
That's a psychological thing. A lot of people are going to bow out. I would say, don't quote me, I take these numbers with a grain of salt, at least 30 to 40%, if not more, will never touch that instrument again. And that's way too much people that will sidestep it because of one or two bad experiences that might have happened early in their life. So that's why I'm a little worried about those platforms.
Well, listen, you know, and I know that decisions are made emotionally in life. Then we justify them, we rationalize them intellectually, right? And like you said, you know, emotion will bring you into it, and emotion can take you out of it too. And that's why you have to have the education. You have to have the experience and conversations with people like yourself to say, okay, this is why we're doing it. These are upsides. These are downsides. This is how we're going to navigate, okay, the journey together. Man, this is it's so important. And we keep using the word conversation. And I keep thinking back to what you first mentioned on the show. And today's guest, Jordan Awuye, managing partner, founder of Awuye Capital. And he is a person that is beginning to blaze trails in the world of finance, and in particular for the African-American community, which is underserved as investors and as professionals, as financial advisors. Only 5% of financial advisors are African-American. So man, there's so many ways to go about this. And I keep going back to the conversation around the dinner table. And how is it that people today, let me answer this. So the question is evolving, as you could tell in my head as we're speaking, Jordan. So if you're a parent, right? If you're a parent and you were not brought up with great dinner conversations, and I love that theme today. And you're that parent and you have kids who are, you know, I have a son who's 11 years old. So they start to, they know money. They know it has buying power. Okay. They're beginning to understand it. So how can,
video games.
Oh yeah. Yep. Yeah. So how can, cause listen, I grew up with those sayings, money doesn't grow on trees, you know, like, oh my God, you know, we're going to lose it and never get it back. Scarcity. Right. So then if you have parents with young kids, even I like to, the younger you started, I think the better. Yep. So here's the question. How can young parents begin to have a healthy, productive conversation with their kids regarding simple finance?
That's amazing. That's amazing. It's about how you frame it and how you introduce it. You're not going to go to your 7-year-old or your 11-year-old and say, what's a diversified portfolio? What's increased beta this week, or whatever the case is. So just like with every great teacher will tell you, in terms of learning, you familiarize it with something that somebody's already passionate about, right? So a lot of times when I was growing up, if I needed to learn something, they might have gave me a basketball analogy, right? Or they might have gave me, you know, I loved anime cartoons like the Narutos. I loved the Japanese culture. So right. They might have gave me that type of analogy. So the reason I bring that up is, how do you have that conversation? Bring it into your child's world, right? And incentivize them. Example is, if you're watching your child watch one of those Baby Shark shows, or maybe watch right? Like you have a simple question or a simple dialogue in regards to what does that mean, or how do you think, thought provoking questions with your kid. How do you think this came about in terms of money, right? What do you think about money? Start to take down and these conversations, again, do not have to be complex, but it's taking down that fear factor, that level of, I need to sidestep the conversation of money, making it normal, making it comfortable, right? And then also, how do you incentivize your kids when they're, when it's Christmas time or around report cards or for their chores? Do you just give your children money, right? Do they earn it?
Right.
When they want something to buy it, let's say your child, what's something that your 11-year-old asked you for recently?
Recently, I believe it was, the upcoming on Xbox, MLB is doing a new release for the latest game. Yep.
Right. So right off, that's an opportunity, an amazing say, okay, you want that MLB game? How much does it cost? I don't know. Well, that's, how could you ask for it if you don't know what it costs? You see what I'm saying?
Yes. I love it. Yep.
So you're telling me there is a price. If I want something, I usually have to give something to get something, right?
Right.
So first lesson, right off the bat, you start to create that for your child. If I want something, I more than likely have to give something. So nothing in life is free, first of all, right? The second
part, I love that.
It costs $50. Okay, so how much is that? Is that a lot of money? They don't know. Let me ask you something. How much do you get paid to mow the lawn when you do it? Oh, you pay me $10, Dad. Okay. So it sounds like, let's do the numbers on that. 10, 20, right? It sounds like you probably have 5 weekends with that game, is it? Right? And at that point, it starts to, you do that enough, these little things. And then after a while, you'll say they don't want, after they buy the MLB game, they're still mowing the lawns. Or maybe it's a different season. Now they're raking leaves or shoveling.
Hey, right.
Do you want anything? Well, no, Dad, I'm okay. You got a good child that doesn't want something every 2 minutes. Well, you know what? Why don't you save? Because maybe the next time you want something, you won't have to wait 5 weeks to get it, right? Because you had your MLB game.
Right.
You start to talk about saving.
Savings. Interesting topic.
After you can even start to introduce the conversation of taxes, right? If your heart so desires, when you pay them out, hey, listen, I need to take, you gave them $10, I'm taking $1 for taxes. What? You see, just these little things that you'll do in the everyday life. You don't need to go out your way. You could even make it fun and
simple. Right.
One thing my mother did as a child, she would incentivize me all the time. And again, she used to call me the penny pincher with money. So she would say, I'll probably be like 5 years old. And she'll say, if you can learn to spell that word by Friday and tell me what it means, regurgitate it out to me, I'll give you whatever. And I'll never forget. I had like two words. One word I always remember because I was really young and it was environment. Environment. I'll never not know how to spell that word because I needed that. I wanted it so much. Hey, listen, I'm not just going to give it to you. So Friday I would come, environment, E-N-V-I, boom.
Right.
If you get straight A's, Jordan, I'll get you a cell phone. Always, I'll get you a site. If you want this, you want that? Okay, cool.
Right.
And she, if you don't mess up in school, if a teacher doesn't call me, outside of me not slapping your face off your head, you. So just however your parenting skills are, you can just infuse it into every day.
Find right. out
what kids like to do,
right.
incorporate it into that and make it fun. And don't, you know, and something I do as an advisor, you never talk overhead, right? And the same right. thing for a child. You're not going to overcomplicate it. You make it fun. You bring it to every day. And I think that's the best way to introduce like finances to a child.
I love the analogies. I love the stories. And it's funny because like, hey, you know what? There's no such thing as a free lunch.
Yes.
I mean, I happen to be a believer in that. That's part of how I was raised. And it's just like, okay, well, how much does this cost? Mm-hmm. Okay, well, how do we get $50? Yeah. You know, what source of income do you have? Mm-hmm. And even talking about tax, you know, sales tax is going to be withheld from you. It's something called income tax. Welcome to that, you know. So I love that. And, you know, and I did want to bring that up, Jordan, because if, you know, there are young parents out there whose parents might not have talked to them about finances, which, you know, might not be that unlikely, certainly, you know, if they're listening to them, you know, with our conversation, begin to encourage them to listen, start to have the conversation with your kids.
Yes.
You know, it's got to start somewhere. It's got to start somewhere.
The earlier the better, too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And today's episode of the Profit Express is brought to you by Corbett Public Relations, promoting and protecting businesses and brands for over 30 years. So please visit my good friends at CorbettPR.com. That's CorbettPR.com. So today it is about trailblazing entrepreneurs, of which I am talking to one today, and there's going to be a podcaster, Jordan, 10 years from now, 15 years from now, where, you know, he just may be mentioning you along the likes of Jay-Z, Oprah. I don't know. It's, you know, that's, you're a few years off.
Amen.
I'm getting that sense. I'm getting that sense because you've approached this world. It's the mission you have, and it's a love for finance that you have that I think is going to be key in your success.
Hey, if I'm able to reach that level, I mean, nothing but gratefulness and trying to pass it along. The irony with that thought, and we talked about it, is the duality of doing what I'm doing for the love of the game. And when I mentor kids and I speak at universities or whatever the case is, I try to push them to focus on whatever craft they pick for the love of the craft, because you love it. But in the same breath, to master the craft, to be the best at it, and to approach that craft from its purest standpoint is the only way you could become the best.
Right.
And once you're the best, then you get the $600 million deal from LVMH. You know what I mean? So it's something that even myself, I still struggle with in regards to how ambitious do you want to be? And how much do you want to push to focus on the numbers, just the numbers of the game, how, you know, getting to $1 billion of net worth, getting to that level. But then also just appreciate being happy to be alive. 2020 was a beautiful year in regards to, if you did not change and grow and get some type of perspective, I'd be worried about that person. So just for a moment in time, I would love to be there just for, you know, self-validation, right? Self-validation as a person. But in the same breath, if I could just help one or two people, you know, get closer to their goals and go to sleep a little bit safer, then we did our job.
You know, you mentioned 2020, and yeah, it was a horrible year for a lot of people for a lot of different reasons, mentally, physically, emotionally, financially, etc. So I would never want to minimize that on anybody, obviously. But, and you said that, and I've thought that, and I've mentioned it to my own clients, and that is a great point, that as horrible as 2020 was, if you did not use that as a great learning opportunity, whether how you run your business, how you do sales, how you learn, how you connect and communicate with people, because so much now is virtual, that's you know, then shame on you. Mm-hmm. Yeah. 2020, you know, listen, in every harsh, harsh experience, there's great opportunity for growth.
Big time. That's the most opportunity comes after some type of hindrance, right? Because things aren't the norm. It's not the status quo anymore.
status quo. Yeah.
And you know what I mean? So only when the status quo is challenged do you see opportunity for new people to rise and for new stories to be written. Yeah. So, you know, again, as bad as it was, it's an opportunity for a lot of people to rise, and it's going to start with the decisions they make, the habits they have, and the mental fortitude to be tough and always think of abundance as opposed to scarcity. You know, we've had that conversation often.
Yeah,
it's very relevant, especially when you're speaking about money, that relationship, to understand that you possibly need multiple streams of income. Having one income is way too close to having no income, because we saw how quickly that could be taken away, regardless if you have a 9-to-5, if you feel that is stable. Taking control of your finances, not depending solely on Social Security. Who's to say Social Security is still there? I could give you some alarming stats that some states are almost bankrupt with Social Security. But we'll see, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So these little things are so relevant to where, again, I think this created a tremendous amount of opportunity, because it's a lot of awareness right now. It's a lot of awareness. And I'm very curious to see how we look as a society in 10, 15 years, like you say.
Well, you mentioned something very important, and I actually came across it not too long ago. I forget where I was reading it, but the importance of, especially nowadays, of not relying on one source of income.
Yes.
Because then if you do, if you lose that source, that job, you know, that paycheck, I mean, that's very dangerous. It's a very scary place to be. Mm-hmm. And that's definitely a conversation I don't think a lot of people are having right now. They certainly didn't have it years ago, for sure, as far mm-hmm. as I can tell. All right, let's talk about this. Let's talk about something fun for a second. Well, all of it's been fun. All of it's been thought-provoking. All of it's been inspiring. Let me say that. Not that it wasn't fun. And listen, what I always like to do in the Profit Express is get people thinking. You know, if I and people listening to our conversation today, we got them thinking. And I know we got some people puckering up right about now, yeah, Jordan. Like, oh, my God. Man, I got some work to do with my finances. Oh, my goodness. That's right. Absolutely. So here's some fun. What is your, I love to ask this question, favorite book that you read that doesn't have to be finance, or whatever book that's influenced you and who you are personally and professionally?
That's an amazing question. I have a couple.
It's hard to say one, I know.
Yeah, I read books very often, but one of my favorite books, How to Win Friends and Influence People.
Mm-hmm. Classic.
Dale Carnegie. has a book by Stephen A. Schwartzman. He is the founder of BlackRock, Blackstone.
Mm-hmm.
It was called What It Takes.
Don't know the title,
but that's an amazing book, especially for entrepreneurs in finance.
Right.
And then just for life, The Alchemist. The Alchemist. I always mess up his last name, but Coelho, Costello, something. But that had so much relevance and helped me so much in life, especially the point in time when I read it, that I would encourage anybody to read it. And Richard Poor Dad, as everybody knows, I feel like everybody says that.
Rich,
amazing book, so you still have to give him his credit.
But those absolutely are
some of my immediate favorites that I would recommend anybody read.
Yeah, that's always one of my favorite questions. Now, so you're still a young individual. You got a lot of life ahead of you, which is great. And you've already accomplished a whole, I'm not trying to swell your ego, but you've already accomplished quite a bit. So far in your career or life, if you had a do-over, a mulligan, what would it be?
I wouldn't use it.
You wouldn't use it?
No, I wouldn't use it.
I ask that question a lot. I do not think I've gotten that answer yet.
Hey, man, I'm happy to be the first. I'm happy to be the first. You know how I feel about that. First to last.
Now, okay, so wait, why wouldn't you use it, though? It's a do-over. It's a mulligan. It can erase a mistake. I know you're great, but you had to have made – we all do, obviously.
And yeah, I hope anybody who's listening doesn't take that answer to mean I never made a mistake. Completely the contrary. But I am a believer that everything that's meant to happen will happen, and everything that happened was supposed to happen. And then also as a person who is very big on self-reflection and learning, those experiences, for better or for worse, made me who I am.
Mm-hmm.
So when I woke up to a brain surgery when I work out 3-4 times a day and eat healthy and I woke up to a brain surgery, that experience, as close as it was to death, as much pain as it was, it allowed me to be this person with so much more perspective. So I could imagine, how a childhood fight, with my brother, if that didn't occur, maybe I'm a little softer, right? Or maybe without having the brain surgery, I don't have more of a purity or more of a love for life. And maybe people don't like me or gravitate to me as much. So maybe I'm not as, I'm a believer that if you change one, we see all those TV shows where if you change one thing in the past, regardless of what it was, you move this hairbrush to here. Those guys, it's like, that seems like how time works. So I love where I'm at. I'm very thankful. I'm happy for the good. I'm happy for the bad. I don't believe I could enjoy. You can't enjoy happiness if you don't know what sadness is. You can't enjoy peace if you don't understand chaos. You can't understand the happiness that comes with financial stability if you've never been broke.
Wow, now you're getting deep on the show here. This is
the apple is too sweet, right? I appreciate life so much. I'm happy to wake up so much. And I know it's because I've seen a lot of pain in my life, and I wouldn't take that away because I think it gave me perspective. And to be 28 years old and as highly regarded and respected as I am, I know I'm just blessed and lucky. So I wouldn't change anything. I'm too scared that it might give me a different outcome. And I'm a
fighter. I like to ask a question. It's a fun question. I've never gotten that answer, and wow, it's a great answer. And the fact that even something as horrible as a surgery or as traumatic as a surgery, you don't want to undo what that had. Because listen, we were just talking about what 2020 was. It's a great learning experience, as awful as that is. Wow, this has been a great conversation. I really appreciate you coming on. I really admire your mission. I know, listen, there's work to be done, representation of African Americans in the financial world as professionals, advisors like yourself, and as investors, as individuals, getting that knowledge, getting that wisdom, getting that confidence to jump into the world of investments. How could people follow you, get to learn more about you?
Oh, definitely, definitely. So if they could go to our website, awoyecapital.com, A-W-O-Y-E, capital with an A.com, or they could follow us on the social media platforms, Instagram and Twitter. Also LinkedIn, literally Jordan Awoye, my name as you see it, or Awoye Capital, the firm. So you know, all those platforms, we have a personal and business page. Probably the most used is Instagram. So feel free to reach out via that platform, and we'll love to talk, love to help.
Awesome. Well, Jordan, listen, thank you for being a part of the show today. Your message was spot on. It's needed. It's inspiring. And thanks for sharing that story. Really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you for having me, Tim. This is a fun way to start the day.
Thank you, sir. And this is the Profit Express. Shows are being released every Wednesday. So follow us on Instagram at the Profit Express, on Twitter at Profit_Express, Facebook as well, the Profit Express page. Each and every Wednesday, great content, just like my interview with Jordan here today. And until next week, this is the Profit Express.